These Days.
Kids These Days.
This is Kids These Days.
This week on the program, we're talking about balance. Many caregivers both give care and work. So how do you manage all that in a way that works for you and for your whole family? Or is the work-life balance one of your struggles? Well, that's the topic of conversation today on Kids These Days. We'll also learn about some of Alaska's family-friendly workplaces and why one mom chose Sweden as the place to raise her family. Plus, we'll hear some teens' perspectives on balancing all that goes on in their lives. That and much more this hour. Hi, I'm Shanna Sheehy. On Kids These Days, we hope our on-air discussions might start conversations between you, your friends, family, and colleagues once this hour is over. But today's topic is one we've already heard many listeners like you talking about. When I'm out and about, I often overhear people talking to each other about what we're calling the work-life balance today. Caregiving, whether it's for small kids, teenagers, disabled family members, or for aging loved ones, it takes a lot of effort, time, emotional energy. And many of us who give care also balance jobs and want to enjoy our lives as well. So how do you do it? Or what are your struggles? We want to know. Send us your helpful hints to mail@kidsthesedays.org or comment directly on our website or through Facebook. I'm joined by two people for today's conversation. In the studio with me this hour is Kathy Day. Kathy is the owner of the Alaska public relations firm KDPR Virtual, a full-service agency where all the employees work virtually instead of in a traditional office. She's worked in the field for more than 20 years and opened her own company in 2000 when she had a baby and realized she could no longer meet the travel and long-hour demands of working at a traditional agency. Since then, it's been her passion to work with other Alaskans who love their jobs, but who also seek more work-life balance. She's talked many of them into quitting their jobs and coming to work for her. She says work is still fun and challenging, but her proudest achievements center around being an involved and happy single mom of her two boys, 11-year-old Trevor and 8-year-old AJ. Thanks, Kathy, for being with me this hour.
Thanks for having me.
And on the phone from New York City is Phoebe Taubman. Phoebe is a senior staff attorney at A Better Balance, the Work and Family Legal Center. There she works on expanding paid leave and flexible work options for families and combating discrimination against pregnant women, parents, and other family caregivers. Prior to joining A Better Balance, Phoebe served as a law clerk for a judge with the United States District Court for the District of New Jersey, and as a litigation associate at Mayer Brown in New York City. She's a graduate of Harvard University and of Georgetown University Law Center, and is the mother of Milo, who's 21 months. Thanks to you, Phoebe, for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, today is about work-life balance, and there's something that I found on your website, A Better Balance, Phoebe, that I thought so well described the subject this hour. I found the phrase, the tug of war between work and family. And I'd like to start this discussion by each of you describing to me, you know, personally, how do you engage with or encounter the tug of war between work and family in your own lives? And Kathy, since you're right here, let me start with you.
Well, I think I call it the juggling act, and it really is a juggling act. But I have always tried to say there's certain times of the day where work is going to be my priority. There's certain times of the day where family is going to be a priority. And there's got to be some time in there where I'm the priority, whether it's get to the gym or just go get my nails done or do something just for me or go out with my girlfriends. Because if you don't do all three of those things, you feel like you're not doing any of them very well at all.
Yeah. Phoebe, how about you? It's an assumption to think that you personally feel a tug of war. Do you encounter that in your life?
I do. I mean, I think I'm lucky to work for an organization whose mission is very clear and aligned with, you know, the experiences that I have as a mom, and so that makes it a lot easier. But certainly, especially in some sense, because I work part-time, it makes it even more difficult to make sure I get everything done for work when I'm at work and everything done at home when I'm at home. And I've definitely had to try some new strategies to make sure that I'm able to juggle it all, because it's just, it's never an easy thing.
It's interesting, too, the idea of part-time work. Sometimes I wonder if part-timers end up with part-time hours, but more than part-time responsibilities.
Yeah. Well, I think especially in our organization, because it's small, you know, everybody wears many hats, and sometimes, you know, especially when it's something you're passionate about, you work beyond perhaps your, you know, appointed hours to get things done. But there's certainly a lot of that in part-time jobs in all different industries, that there can be sort of this bleeding over the amount of time you've agreed to work and not always pay to go with it, which is one of the problems we try to work on at our organization.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to that. Kathy, I want to ask you, since you are yourself an employer and you work in this virtual office, maybe you can explain a little bit about how you do that. And you know, I said in your introduction that you started your public relations work in this virtual way as a response in part to becoming a parent and a caregiver and having to figure out how to do this juggling act a little differently than you had before.
Right. I think I just realized I was in a position where I traveled a lot and where I was working probably 60 to 80 hours a week at the firm that I worked for. And once I had a baby, there was just no way that I could do all of that. And I really just wanted to be able to represent the clients I wanted to represent, to work as much as I wanted to work, still be able to make a living, but then also be there, because I know they're only little for a little while and you really need to enjoy it while you can. And so I don't think I did it very traditionally. I actually quit my job when my baby was 3 weeks old and said I'm not coming back, and opened up my own agency. And it was very stressful, obviously, for the first year getting things up and running. I wish that I had planned things out and had this big master plan. But
so you made that decision, like baby came, and then all of a sudden you said I have to completely reevaluate.
Yeah, my company said we need you to come back after 3 weeks, and I just said I haven't even slept yet. I can't do it.
Huh. So then, okay. So then you went from that into building your own company, this virtual company, and establishing yourself and so forth. It sounds like it was a stressful time. But then you, in your work, have taken it as an employer very seriously as well. And I believe it's the case that you offer a pretty family-friendly work environment for the people who do work with your organization.
Exactly. Well, you know, I started off just with 3 or 4 clients and then worked as much as I needed to work. And then I started running into all these people who felt the same exact way that I did. I'm going to have a baby and I don't think I'm going to be able to keep my job and that kind of thing. So I just realized there was all these really talented people out there who were looking for work balance as well. So I said, why don't we all team up? Well, you know, and it kind of just evolved into a virtual firm where we offer everything that a big agency offers. Some of my people work full-time for me. Some of them work part-time. They're all subcontractors, so they all have their own businesses. And we all just sort of make it work. But priority one is that you're working the hours you want to work, you're working for the clients you want to work for, and you're getting that balance in your life that you were seeking.
So, Phoebe Taubman, I'm wondering, from your perspective working with the organization A Better Balance, what Kathy's been able to do here in Alaska, this is a situation that many people find themselves in as they're trying to balance their family responsibilities and their work life, or are you experiencing that a lot of people don't necessarily have the option to go into their own business and then they're kind of stuck with what their employers do or don't do for their family responsibilities?
Yeah, I think it's a mix. I mean, there's certainly a trend that we've seen of moms who are starting their own businesses because that's the best way for them to achieve the flexibility and the predictability that they need for their responsibilities at home. And that's definitely something that's been more and more prevalent. But I also think there are plenty of jobs where folks don't really have the ability to start off on their own. Just the nature of the work doesn't sort of lend itself to that. And this may also be true in certain industries or certain wage levels. And so a lot of people find themselves stuck in a workplace that is inflexible, outdated in its policies, and doesn't really take into account the workers' family responsibilities. And that's really hard.
So I'd like to maybe discuss where that value is coming from in the society that we live in. It's so interesting that that is the case for many workers. And I'm wondering, why are our working life structured in such a way, Phoebe, that it's so difficult sometimes to do this thing, to balance work and life? Like, what's going on in the bigger picture?
Yeah, well, I think there's a few things going on. I mean, the first thing I would say is that demographically, our workforce looks very different today than it did, you know, about 50 years ago when a lot of our policies were put in place at the national level. You know, if you think back to, and not all families were like this by any means in the 50s either, but there was a certain ideal of a primary breadwinner and a primary stay-at-home spouse, and often the breadwinner is the husband and the stay-at-home spouse is the wife. And the husband, being this, you know, primary breadwinner, was expected and could work as long as he needed and as many weeks or months or years in a row without interruption because he had this constant source of domestic work at home in the form of his wife, you know, to meet the repair person and care for the child and visit the elderly parents. And as we know, watching all sorts of other trends in the economy and in the society over the last 50 years, that's just not possible for most families anymore. And most families need two incomes and have two parents in the workplace, or a lot of families are single parent-headed families. And so there's this disconnect between policies established sort of at a different time with a different family in mind versus what families look like today. And in the U.S., I feel like there hasn't been a response to that change the way there has been in other parts of the world. And, you know, that's constantly perplexing to us. But I would say part of the reason may be that, you know, as a country, we don't have a very strong tradition of solving these types of social or family problems on a collective basis, or even looking at this as a collective and systemic problem. We look at it culturally as something that individuals should work out on their own, you know, work it out within your family, within your personal networks, when in fact this problem is actually much bigger than that. And so it constantly frustrates me as an advocate that we have politicians who talk about family values, but it doesn't seem like they're actually valuing families.
And when you say that the problem is much bigger than that, much bigger than individual families working it out amongst themselves with their own individual circumstances, explain to me what you mean by that.
Well, for example, when you look compared to the rest of the world, there are a lot of countries that have policies in place to ensure that parents can take some paid time off when their children arrive. And it varies country to country, but, you know, there's often at least a month of paid time. And in the U.S., we really don't have any guarantee of paid time off. And then that can impact a family's, you know, income and their economic security if they can't take time to care for a child without worrying about losing a job or paying the bills. And that's something that I think as a society we should be concerned about, because, you know, caring for children is about raising the next generation and educating the future workforce. And there's also value to caring for the elderly and all the, you know, the work that goes into that. And it just seems like this is a lot of real work that has been invisible in our culture that we don't really think about when we think about what's necessary for the rest of our economy to keep humming along. And so we've taken it for granted as a society, and I think it's time to really bring that work out into the light and make sure that we prioritize it when we're thinking about, you know, our policies.
And that idea of invisible work, or I think I've heard it referred to as shadow work as well, that's a really important point here, and I do want to get to that. But before we get too far away from another point you were making, which was how the U.S. views care work, how the U.S. policy-wise has set itself up to support, in particular, families, but also families, say, who are in need of or in desire of maternity and paternity leave, we have prepared a piece that gets right at the heart of that. The amount of paid parental leave new moms and dads receive varies greatly by country. In the U.S., there's no guarantee of any paid time for men or women. By contrast, Sweden offers a generous 480 days to be shared between parents and distributed however they see fit until the child is 8 years old. That kind of support can be appealing for first-time parents, and it's why, come May of this year, one U.S. citizen and her Swedish husband will be having their baby in Sweden. Sweden is ranked first in the world for child well-being by a recent Save the Children report on the state of the world's mothers. Candice Madrid Dahlqvist spoke with producer Sarah Gonzalez from her current home in London about her family's decision to have their child and raise the new addition in Sweden.
Hi, Candice. Thank you so much for speaking with us on Kids These Days. I'm really glad to talk to you too.
You and your husband, Johan, have lived all over the world and you've worked all over the world. New York, San Francisco, London, Stockholm. Why are you choosing to have your baby in Sweden?
Well, actually, my husband and I, we were living in Stockholm before we were in London. I was surrounded by a lot of women. I was working there who were getting pregnant at the time. And in Sweden, it's pretty much the norm to have your child at a later time. Being at the age that I am, I'm 35 years old. So I was surrounded by that. And, you know, and when we moved here in London, I started working, and that's when my husband and I started thinking about having a baby and have learned how the medical system here works and parental leave, paternity pay. It all, you know, was pretty equal, but in terms of the actual balance, it was very different. You know, the medical system is the same. It's really, really excellent here, actually. I have nothing to complain about. But towards the middle of the pregnancy, we had thought, okay, you know, we really need to sort of chill out and really focus on having a family. And that's when we decided, okay, it makes sense to go back to Stockholm.
What did you learn about the like paternity and maternity leave?
Yeah, well, that's interesting because if I had stuck with my job here, I would have gotten 5 months leave. Whereas if I were to go to Stockholm, and I still have a record of having worked there for 3 years, and then have continued to work within the EU, if I were to go back to Sweden now, I would actually get the same amount of pay, but for longer, up to between 6 to 9 months. And that's just not myself. My husband would also get some sort of paternal pay and paternal leave from the Swedish system. Mm-hmm. Whereas here in London, he would get 2 weeks.
2 weeks. So, okay. It's a big difference.
That was a huge difference as well.
Candace, do you think that you'll ever live in the U.S. and work here at some point in the future?
I think it's something that we have both been thinking about. But I reminding him of the realities of moving back. And that is, you know, him working all hours of the day and night and weekends. And probably the same for me, because I will need to work to support that cost of living there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where that leaves the child. You know, I have never really pictured ourselves as being the kind of parents who hardly seeing them, you know, and having these crazy vacations every summer. That's really not the way I had pictured it. I don't know. Maybe there's a way, and we'll find a way to make it work there. But for now, it seems like it's not something that we would want.
Thanks for speaking with us, Candace.
Yeah, it was really nice speaking to you too. Thanks so much.
Visit kidsthesedays.org, where we'll link you to the State of the World's Mothers report published by the Save the Children organization. It's a very interesting read. This is Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and with me today to talk about work and family and balancing the modern day demands of life are Phoebe Taubman and Kathy Day. And we just heard a woman named Candace who's choosing between, you know, her options in London of 5 months paid maternity leave versus 6 to 9 months in Sweden plus paid paternity leave for her husband. And I don't have the benefit, Phoebe, of seeing your reaction to that, but I do have the benefit of Kathy Day, who's sitting across from me. And we are both green with envy, I could say, maybe. Kathy, is that an accurate portrayal of how
it is? I was just thinking, why are we not all going to Sweden to have our babies? I mean, I can't believe that. I worked at a firm for 10 years and was a shareholder, and I was given no maternity leave paid. So I had to not take vacation for the year and use my 3 weeks vacation. And then I was expected to come back to work. And my husband actually had to work a double shift before so that he could come in and be there when I gave birth. And he fell asleep while I was giving birth because he was so tired from working the 2 days prior. So
wow.
That's a big contrast.
That is a big contrast. And Phoebe Taubman, you're with a Better Balance. And I'm wondering, what's your reaction to hearing what we just heard?
Well, it's funny because, you know, to some extent I know that story very well, and so I'm not as shocked, but it does, every time I hear it, make me sort of cringe about the U.S. because we're just so far behind the rest of the world. I mean, Sweden's really one of the leaders, but this is not, you know, something exclusive to wealthy countries either. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's certainly less time sometimes than other places, but, you know, around the world, there was a study done where, you know, 178 countries guarantee some form of paid maternity leave under national law, and the U.S. was found to stand alone with Papua New Guinea and Swaziland and not guaranteeing any paid maternity leave.
Yeah, actually, I have an excerpt from that study. I found this in USA Today, and I'll quote from it. With little public debate, the United States has chosen to a radically different approach to maternity leave than the rest of the developed world. The United States and Australia are the only industrialized countries that don't provide paid leave for new mothers nationally, though there are exceptions in some U.S. states. And to put that another way, out of 168 nations in a Harvard University study in 2004, 163 had some form of paid maternity leave, leaving the United States, as you just mentioned, Phoebe, in the company of Lesotho, Papua New Guinea, and Swaziland.
Yeah, and I think even since that study came out, Lesotho changed its policy.
Oh, gosh.
We're even in a smaller group of countries.
Well, that's so interesting. And I have to share something else. There's a pair of social work professors at Columbia University who did a study and found that for men who do take some paternity leave, and this is in the U.S., say 2 weeks or more, they followed those men when the infants were 9 months old. And of the men who took paternity leave, they were more likely to be involved in the daily care of the children when they were older children at this point, 9 months. So it's so interesting to think about, you know, we talk about that bonding time when a baby's born, and the maternity leave is time for mom and baby to bond. I don't know that we think about it so much with dads, but it's pretty important as well.
Yeah, I would say it's absolutely critical, and I think it's really interesting to see how other countries have really prioritized this by setting aside a certain amount of time that can only be used by a father, and if not, then it's forfeited by the family. And in Quebec, where they've done this successfully, you know, there's actually a much larger uptake in men taking leave as a result. And, you know, here we have policy that's designed to be gender neutral and encourage both men and women to stay home. But ultimately, it's about the culture of your workplace. And there just remains this very strong cultural stigma against men taking any extended time when their children are born. I think, you know, the younger generations of men, studies have started to show that they really are prioritizing this, and maybe they'll help to mobilize some kind of shift. But as it stands, I think a lot of men feel pressure, even if there's a policy on the books at their workplace, allow them some time, they feel pressure not to take very much. And it's really, that's harmful to, you know, the whole family.
Yeah, but you're saying that there might be a shift in how some of the younger generation who soon is to have kids may view whether or not they should be taking time away. Is that what you were sort of indicating?
Yeah, I mean, we did some research on this a few years back amongst law students, but there are also much broader studies that have been done of what they call Generation Y. And, you know, for whatever reason, perhaps because these folks grew up with, you know, working, both parents working, and they had their own experiences as a result of that, there seems to be a trend amongst younger workers to prioritize flexibility and time with family, even over additional pay, when they're looking at their job benefits. And for young men, I think they feel an additional desire to be much more involved in child rearing and family than perhaps their fathers were.
You're listening to Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. Listeners make our program possible, so thank you for your continued support. Kids These Days receives financial support from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. This program is recorded and distributed through partnerships with KSKA-FM in Anchorage and the Alaska Public Radio Network. You can find out more about all of our partners on our website. That's kidsthesedays.org. Still to come this hour, we'll hear how teens say they balance their work and family lives, and we'll hear from one parent, and we'll hear about Alaska's family-friendly workplaces, plus more with Kathy Day and Phoebe Tobman. That and more coming up after a quick break. All kids make mistakes, and sometimes kids really mess up. In Alaska, what happens when a minor breaks the law? How does our legal system handle our kids, and what do we need to know about it? That's the topic next time on Kids These Days. We'll learn about the Nome Youth Facility and hear from some former residents. And we'll profile the North Star Youth Court in Fairbanks and its young litigators. That and more next time on the program. We're back. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and this is Kids These Days. Today, I'm talking with Phoebe Tobman and Kathy Day about balancing the many things that life can throw your way as a caretaker. So before the break, we were talking about paternity and maternity leave. And I think I'd like to hear specifically about what we were also talking about, some of the benefits that people seeking maternity and paternity leave in different countries have. And I'd like to know a little bit more about our laws here in the U.S. And I know, Phoebe, with a better balance, I've found, and we'll link to these from kidsthesedays.org, there's quite a few fact sheets related to this that are available through your website. And one of them is specifically about FMLA, which is the Family Medical Leave Act. And I'm wondering if we can start there. Can you tell us a little bit about what rights we do have, especially under FMLA?
Sure, yeah. So the FMLA is actually a really complicated law, but it's the one federal law we have that, you know, affects people across the country and is designed to help with this balance between work and life. And basically, it guarantees a certain section of the workforce 12 weeks of unpaid leave a year, so up to 12 weeks every 12 months, to care for either a seriously ill relative, to bond with a new child, either newborn or adopted, or to care for themselves. And there's also some new provisions about those caring for military personnel. And the main, I would say, weakness, or two main weaknesses of the law is that it doesn't cover everybody. There are some rather large carve-outs, and that also the leave is not paid. And so even for those who are eligible and able to take advantage of the law and its benefits, they may not be able to afford to because they can't afford to go 12 weeks without pay. And so that's sort of the bare bones.
Okay. And when you say fairly large carve-outs, could you give us some examples of, say, someone whose job wouldn't come under that law?
Yeah. So I would say somebody who works for a smaller company that has fewer than 50 employees is not going to be covered, or somebody who works at a larger company but hasn't worked enough hours in the year before taking leave, or who hasn't worked for the company for at least 12 months, wouldn't be covered. So when you sort of add all those different carve-outs together, it means only about half of the private sector workforce can take advantage of this law.
Wow, that seems much larger. It's a much larger number than I would have guessed.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people work for smaller companies, and then the other limitations about hours and how long you've worked, especially in certain industries where, you know, people come in and out of the workforce a lot, there can be a problem meeting that threshold of having worked enough months to be able to qualify. So it's, you know, it's a great first step, I would say, but it was passed almost 20 years ago, and there hasn't been much change to it since. And there's obviously, as I described earlier, a lot of need for more than that. And some of that's being filled at the state level, which I'm happy to talk about as well.
Well, sure. I'd like to find out more about the state level, but I also want to make sure I take an opportunity to ask Kathy Day, who is the owner of KDPR Virtual here in Alaska. Now, Kathy, your workforce is smaller than 50 people. Is that accurate?
That's right. And I actually don't even actually have employees. They're all subcontractors. So we all own our own small businesses and work subcontracting to each other. So none of this coverage would apply for this.
So, but even so, as someone who manages your subcontractors, you, if I'm not mistaken, make a point of extending these kinds of benefits that would fall under FMLA to your contractors, in this case, who aren't exactly employees but kind of function in a similar way. So as someone who's in charge of a business like that and making the decisions that have to do with that bottom line that many businesses are concerned with, why do you put emphasis on, you know, making your place of work and those who work with you family friendly in that way, especially since you're not really bound to for any legal reasons.
I think it's just become a passion of mine. I thought, wow, my experience was so horrible. I don't want anybody to ever have to go through what I went through. And it was just so wrong. And so anything that I can do to make sure that other women who are coming up through the workforce in my field are able to find that balance and to be able to manage it and not to have to go through what I went through. It just kind of has become a personal passion of mine. And we're really lucky because we have the flexibility. One of the gals, my graphic designers right now, has a brand new baby at home. And so we've pulled in another graphic designer and he's pulling some more weight while she spends time with her baby. And so we're in a very lucky industry in that we can pull people in and out and share the workload. And I know that doesn't work in every kind of field, but it's my number one priority. And I'm constantly telling my people, you tell me how many hours you can work this month, be realistic, make sure that you're giving yourself quality time. And several of the people that work for me, their husbands work on the slope, so they're 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. And so they work really hard for me those 2 weeks when their husbands are home from the slope and the husbands are spending a lot more time with the kids. And then when the dads are going back up to the slope, and I know then I need to kind of back off and not give them as much work because they're juggling.
And do you ever, though, as someone who's the organizer of all of that, like everybody has a different schedule. Everybody, you know, some of your employees are more efficient this 2 week period of time and less in that other 2 week period of time. Do you ever just want to pull your hair out and think, man, if I just had people coming in from 9 to 5, this would be so much easier? Does it ever come into play?
You know, it probably would be easier, and I'm the one who has to pick up the slack. You know, in the bottom line, if the work doesn't get done, I'm the one who stays up until 2 in the morning to get it done because they didn't come through. But so it is frustrating. But to me, it's worth it. If I see that my employees are happy and that they're doing work that they're really into, we're in a very creative industry, and I can see if things are working well and their life-family balance, their work production is so much better. And they're the greatest people to work with. I wouldn't want it any other way.
So you actually think you see a benefit, even if you're maybe frustrated at times, you see a benefit from having employees, or not employees, but contractors, folks that you work with who actually have achieved better balance. You think that they're more effective in what they do?
Absolutely. I think they work quicker. I think they work smarter because they have to. And they're just really happy people. And so they produce good work.
Well, Phoebe Tobin, you mentioned that you have some specifics about states. I'm wondering if you know anything in particular about our state, the great state of Alaska, with regard to some of the benefits or lack thereof when it comes to taking family leave.
Yeah, so I would say when it comes to family leave and paid family leave, you know, in terms of paid leave, there's really only two states at the moment who are doing that, California and New Jersey. Others are trying. But they haven't been able to pass those laws, or in the case of Washington State, they passed it, but they haven't figured out how to fund it. And then there are also states who have passed laws that actually try to deal with some of the gaps or the carve-outs of the federal law by, you know, covering employers who have fewer employees or reducing the hours requirement. And so I don't believe, I'd want to double check, but I don't believe Alaska is one of them. But Alaska does have something that only one other place in the country does, which is a protection explicitly against discrimination at the workplace based on parenthood. And this is something that we work on a lot, too, because, as I described earlier, there's a lot of bias and stigma in the workplace around parenting and caregiving. And there are ways to use existing law to try to combat that, but it's really great when there's a law that says, you know, straight out that this is illegal. And Alaska is one of the few places that has that. So that's a plus.
That is. I know when I was on your website, I mentioned that there are several fact sheets, and we will link to those from our website at kidsthesedays.org. And there is one called Family Responsibilities Discrimination. And in it, and in your fact sheets there at A Better Balance, it tells you things to kind of look at, like, is this happening to you? Well, look at these things. And when it there's a part of that fact sheet that has to do with what kind of family discrimination is not prohibited under current law. And there's several things. Like, for example, the first item, an employer can treat both men and women with children equally poorly relative to their coworkers without children and not violate existing law. And there are several other items there. But the thing that was so great that I found at the end of that is it said some, you know, one state, I think it said, or maybe you just said two states. There are a few states that protect against this, and our state happens to be one of those. So it's something good for all of us Alaskans to know.
Yeah, absolutely. These laws, you know, where they are in the books, I think very few people know about them. And it's important. I think your show is a wonderful way to make sure people know and reach as many folks as possible to let them know that this is a protection in their state.
Well, this is Kids These Days. I'm your host, Shanna Sheehy, and today I'm speaking with Phoebe Taubman, Senior Staff Attorney at A Better Balance, and Kathy Day, who's the owner of KDPR here in Alaska. As a working parent, how good do you feel about your work-life balance may have a lot to do with where you work. Some companies go out of their way to help working parents juggle all of the demands of raising kids, along with a full or part-time job. Kids These Days' own Jessica Cox found a few in Alaska.
On the first floor of the Credit Union One building in South Anchorage, preschool kids are deep into imaginative play. The Learning Center has space for 32 children in toddler, preschool, and school-age classrooms. The spaces are bright and clean, full of dress-up clothes and things to build with. The nationally accredited facility stays open late to accommodate parents who get off work at 6 or 7 p.m. It's open on weekends, too. And it's available to Credit Union One employees at subsidized rates, less than they'd pay somewhere else. Employees in other locations are reimbursed for the difference between their daycare costs and those available at the center. Human Resources Manager Leslie Pierce says their workforce is young, and a lot of people have small children, so they do whatever they can to help parents return to work. Besides being the right thing to do, there's the cost of turnover.
You would be amazed at how much turnover costs, yeah. If you just start basically with the time that it took either me or one of my associates to interview the applicant, check their references, get them in the door, then you got at least 10 business days of training, then you get them in the branch. Being a teller is a difficult entry-level job, but definitely when we invest in that person, we want to make sure that we can keep them if at all possible.
The credit union also has lactation rooms at every branch and picks up the tab when employees rent breast pumps from Providence. They have a transition back to work program. For 8 weeks, a returning parent can work 6-hour days to ease back into work.
We do determine what those 6 hours will be, but we have seen over time that that does change the population of employees who are able to return back to work.
The Learning Center at Credit Union One is managed by Providence Alaska, another family-friendly Alaska company. 12 times, the company has applied for Working Mother Magazine's ranking of the best companies for working parents, and 3 times it has made the nation's top 100. Margaret Bauer is director of work-life programs for Providence.
I think by participating in those, we actually benchmark ourselves and we're able to look at what areas we excel in and what we can improve in, and I think that's proved beneficial.
Providence has telework and innovative schedule programs for non-clinical workers, a tuition credit for continuing education, and an adoption assistance policy. The schedule at Providence means clinical workers often work 3 12-hour days and have some weekdays off. Their on-site childcare center allows for part-time enrollment and even includes a separate room for mildly ill children. The kids who use that program don't even have to be enrolled at the center. 26% of Providence's employees work part-time. They qualify for health insurance benefits if they work more than 20 hours a week. Bauer says the family-friendly focus is definitely worth it because it builds employee loyalty. They looked at 28 years of records from the childcare center and found that parents of kids who were enrolled had extremely low turnover. Less than 6% left within 5 or 6 years. So far, there isn't a statewide program to recognize family-friendly companies, but several different communities host awards. In Juneau, it's a collaboration between the Chamber of Commerce and Partnerships for Families and Children. Chamber President Kathy Romick has been an enthusiastic supporter since she began at the Chamber.
You don't generally hear about this kind of thing. You know, you just feel fortunate when you do work for somebody that is family-friendly, but to be able to talk about it out loud, these people, it's great to get them up behind the podium and have them talk about their employer, and I don't think some of the employers even realize how well thought of they are for being, you know, so understanding of, you know, small kids and aging parents and just doing the things we have to do.
Joy Lyons, Director of Association for the Education of Young Children, Southeast Alaska Chapter, says just doing the promotion for the awards provides a lot of education about things companies can do to be family friendly. Some of them cost free.
One of the real, you know, no cost options is for any employer just to have that open communication. And parents say often that, just knowing their employer cares about them and they feel like they're valued as a human being, you know, not just an employee, that has a huge effect on parents to just know that, oh, someone understands that it is a really challenging time.
Last year, the city and borough of Juneau was recognized, along with True North Federal Credit Union and Shattuck and Grumman Insurance. Shattuck and Grumman's application highlighted the fact that being family-friendly isn't only about young children.
And employees said that they were able to work remotely for a short period of time to care for their terminally ill parent, and that, you know, thanks to that option, they have fond memories instead of regret.
Fairbanks also gives annual awards to family-friendly businesses. In Anchorage, groups are working to get the awards going again. I'm Jessica Cochran.
And this is Kids These Days. It's a weekly conversation about topics that affect Alaska families and communities as a whole. Today we're talking about balancing work and family life. Alaskan Kathy Day is in the studio with me, and we're joined by Phoebe Tobman from A Better Balance, a national working families advocacy group. And she's on the phone with us today from New York City. And I'd like to invite both of you guys to maybe comment on the idea of recognizing family-friendly businesses. I know it's something that sounds like it's happening in Alaska, but not necessarily very formally. And Phoebe, are you aware of any kinds of national recognition for organizations and businesses that are family-friendly?
You know, I believe there is national recognition, but I know certainly there is also at the state level and other states around the country. And I think it's a really wonderful way to boost this kind of consideration among companies for their workers, because it's a positive sort of carrot rather than a stick when you're trying to talk about changing values and changing people's priorities. You know, there's one way to do it where you impose requirements, but there's also, it's very effective also to encourage businesses to do well. And I think that this is an important piece of that project.
Kathy Day.
I just love to see the employers that are doing this just to continue to brag about it, because I that's a huge statistic that Providence had, 6% turnover. There's a dollar figure involved in this, and a lot of companies are not realizing how much money they're spending on employee turnover and losing money over this policy. So I think the more that the companies that are doing it right can talk about it, it's going to move us to where we need to be moving.
So far this hour, we have talked a whole lot about the family dynamic. We've talked a lot about when a family has infants and there's paternity leave and that sort of things. But we've also made a lot of references to caring for aging parents, for example, or other family members that are getting older. And Phoebe Tobman, in your organization, I know that you have four issues that, at least as far as your website goes, you say you focus on. And those four are sick leave, family leave, fairness in the workplace, and valuing care work. And I know before, in our first half of the program, you mentioned this invisible work that happens that isn't necessarily very easy to see and isn't necessarily very valued. And I'm wondering if we can't steer the conversation a little bit into those areas, like the circumstances that people find themselves in, say, with discrimination in the workplace if they're caring for an aged parent and then they have to spend some time away from work or maybe seen as less dedicated to the job, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a growing problem in that there are a lot of people in the legal field trying to figure out ways to fix it. But it's certainly, especially as, you know, the baby boomer generation ages, going to be even more of a concern for folks who are caring for their elderly parents. And there's not as many legal protections in the books right now for those situations. As I mentioned before, the FMLA might cover people who are caring for the elderly, but probably, as I said, only about half the private workforce has access to that. So there's a lot of vulnerability, and unfortunately, you know, in certain workplaces, any time taken out, even if it's, you know, caring for an aging parent or other relative, can be seen as a lack of dedication or seriousness about your work, and those folks can be demoted or otherwise pushed aside because they're not considered to be really dedicated to their job. But I think when you talk about invisible work, this is part of the project, is to make sure we as a society appreciate how much of this is going on and how much people are putting their time and money and effort into this work to help, you know, the rest of us keep our economy chugging along the way it is, but we don't often think about that work that they're doing as work, and that, in fact, a lot of our policies actually just harm folks who are doing that work. So I think that this elder care piece is actually going to be even growing as a problem in the coming years.
We will link from this show on our website to previous conversation we've had about, we called it caring for caregivers, and it kind of describes that sandwich generation where you might have folks who are caring for little ones and also caring for aging parents at the same time and the dynamic of that. I'm wondering, Phoebe, just picking up on something you said that some of our policies currently actually make that job of caring for aging parents even more difficult. I'd like you to explain that a little more.
Well, I would say in terms of, the discrimination laws, there are some ways in which people could be protected if their employer sort of assumes things about them because they care for an elder relative. But even something like Social Security benefits, I mean, you don't, as a caregiver, if you take time out of the workplace to care for someone, you're not receiving credits for that time towards your Social Security benefits ultimately when you retire for the time that you're out of the workforce, even though you're providing a much needed service to your family and to the broader community by caring for your relative and, you know, saving healthcare costs by allowing them to live at home and not be in a hospital or assisted living facility. There's a lot of sort of societal costs that are saved by family members taking on this work themselves, but those family members often suffer real economic penalties because of their, you know, sacrifice, which seems just inherently wrong policy matter.
And that's an interesting way of framing that as well. I can't say that I've thought of those consequences in that way before. And it also makes me wonder what might be sounding like a really naive question, but doesn't it just seem like if you're caring for anyone in your family, that your employer should just be cool? You know, like, it seems like that would benefit everybody, but obviously that's not happening. Or
yeah, I mean, I think Kathy is a fabulous example of how it can help when an employer really has had these experiences and prioritizes this in their workplace. Because as Kathy said, you know, you produce very loyal and dedicated employees because they appreciate so much that you understand what they're going through and you value them as a human being and you value their work that they provide in caring for their families. So I think that there is a certain amount of, you know, duh about this. Like, why wouldn't all employers do that? But, you know, I think in sort of a capitalist society, there's going to be certain profit incentives that sometimes clash with those values, and some people will choose to go one direction and others will go the other. But as Kathy was saying, there's also, you know, some connection between saving money and providing these kinds of flexible benefits, because you really do help your bottom line when you care about your workers.
Well, we've been spending time discussing the difficulty adults have with balancing the many obligations required of them. And we were just using words like cool and duh, which makes it seem like a perfect time to talk about the perspective that some teens might have on their hectic schedules. With sports, clubs, college prep courses, homework, family obligations, and oh yeah, lots of time spent with friends, the schedule of a high schooler can barely leave enough time for sleep. The Alaska Teen Media Institute's Nikki Navio went out to find out how teenagers are making the most of their days.
Well, there's Environmental Club. I'm also in Model United Nations and just different dance committees. And then also after school, I play the piano and I'm also involved in a lot of different church activities.
I'm a president of the Diversity Club at APU. I'm editor of the journal. I'm editor of the alumni newsletter. And I have a work study at Mosley Sports Center.
During school, I have an AP class, which is really hard, and then I have dance contempo, which is a class in school, and you have to stay after school. I also do competitive cheerleading for Arctic, and we're getting ready to go on a competition to Arizona soon, so that's that for 4 hours every day. And then on top of that, I have a job, and then I go to church on Sundays, and sometimes I have choir, depending on if I can live through the rest of that day.
After school, my activities, I play soccer, football, tennis, and then before I joined this dance contempo class, I was in dance contempo, so it was really hard to juggle in between that. And after school, I work at our family business, just try to get some extra money.
I take 18 credits. I volunteer at my church on Sundays. I teach English as a second language on Thursdays. On Tuesdays, I have Bible study. And I'm also a nanny. And last semester, I had an internship.
Do you think stress is a major factor in your life?
Sometimes it is. It gets pretty crazy. I mostly just like, I go work out, kind of clear my mind and stuff, go run or something, or maybe go fix something, I don't know. Something to distract me.
If I, like in a class, if there's something that I don't understand or I can't figure out the homework, it definitely affects me. But, I mean, I try to just move on or get help from someone or ask the teachers. But, I mean, it's definitely a part of life. Especially in high school, figuring everything out.
I give myself a planner and I write everything down. Like, I cannot miss a thing. Everything, every second, I write it down. It's in my planner, it's in my phone, so I always know what I have to do.
Sometimes I just sit down at night, like, plan everything out before, where so I won't be, like, winging it, like, oh, maybe I should go now. I'll have a time where I'll leave right after another to get to another activity.
Do you feel like your schedule is balanced with regards to your life?
I wish I had more time for sports and probably some more time for school.
Yeah, I wish I had time to sleep. I wish I had time to do my homework. Like, I can get my homework done, but I wish I had time to thoroughly do it and understand completely what I'm doing.
I would change not going to work because I don't have that much time for my family, and yeah, we just never hang out.
Adult staff at the Alaska Teen Media Institute helped with the production of Nikki's piece today. You can hear more teenage voices by checking out alaskateenmedia.org, and we'll link you to that site from ours at kidsthesedays.org. Today we're talking about work-life balance, and in the time that we have left with our guests Kathy Day and Phoebe Tobin, I'd like to talk just a little bit about another organization out there that's called Take Back Your Time. And Take Back Your Time is a major U.S. and Canadian initiative to challenge the epidemic of overwork and overscheduling and what they call time famine that now threatens, this is their words, our health, our families and relationships, communities and environment. I think talking about this right after hearing all those teen voices talk about how busy they are is kind of perfect. And the Take Back Your Time Time to Care agenda includes lots of things we've already discussed, like paternity and maternity leave, and sick leave, paid sick leave, more leave that's paid in general every year. But it also talks about making Election Day a holiday so that more people can get out and get civically engaged. And it also focuses on making sure that you take vacations, which I think is an interesting way to maybe leave that. Is there among us a reluctance sometimes to get out there and really disengage and really take the time that maybe we're given from our jobs, paid or unpaid, to get out there and recreate ourselves, as they say, in recreation, whether it's on a sunny beach somewhere, what we're thinking about right now, or, a vacation closer to home, for example?
You know, I think it's kind of a mindset, and I have two groups of friends. I have these friends who work all the time, and it's all about the money, and then I have my friends who have kind of decided, you know, we have what we need. Maybe we don't need that extra $30,000, you know, why don't you work part-time? So I see there's sort of two different mindsets in this whole thing, and a lot of it's money-driven, but some people are making really, really, I think, the decisions that, like I've made, that it's not all about money, that there's other things that are way more important. So mindset.
Mm-hmm. Phoebe Tobin, does the Better Balance advocate for, you know, vacation and that sort of thing in the work that you do?
You know, it's not a central part of our agenda, but it's certainly of a piece with everything we do. I mean, the United States, again, is behind the rest of the world in not mandating any kind of paid time off like that. I mean, we have no guarantee of vacation. And then there's the cultural expectation that you won't take very much, even if you are guaranteed it by your employer. So there's really a tough work ethic here. But I think, you know, when you look around the world at other economies, there's not really a show, they haven't shown improved productivity here as a result of not taking vacations. And in fact, I think taking time away can help to clear your mind and make you more productive when you get back. So I think it's a very important piece of all of what we're talking about. And when I was listening to the teens talking, it sort of made me a little wistful, because I think, what are they missing out on in their younger years in terms of discovering the world when they're feeling overburdened and overscheduled? And I would mention in connection to paid sick days too that something we've found in our research, especially in families where the both parents work very inflexible hours, that often teens are tasked with caring for their younger siblings, and that can also be a piece of what they're juggling. When their parents can't take paid sick time, for example, you know, they're asking their teens to stay home with younger kids, and sometimes those kids even have to then stay out of school to care for their siblings, and it can have many ripple effects down the road.
Hmm. How interesting. Well, I think, ladies, that's where we need to leave this conversation this hour. It's been a real pleasure, and I'd like to thank both of you for your time today.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Phoebe Tobman is Senior Staff Attorney for A Better Balance, a national advocacy group for family-friendly policy. And Kathy Day is from KDPR Virtual, a virtual public relations firm in Alaska whose business puts family-friendliness into practice. Come to kidsthesedays.org to link directly to abetterbalance.org. You can find loads of information there about the work this organization is doing on behalf of working families. We'll also link to many of the resources we've talked about this hour and some that we did not, like timeday.org, momsrising.org, husbandsanddads.com. Those are all really fun to check out. And also, Kathy's business, kdprvirtual.com. We'll link to that from our website at kidsthesedays.org. There are many reasons to visit us online throughout the week. This program you just heard is available directly on our website and by podcast. You can share it with your friends or listen to it again. You can read new and original work by our cadre of Alaskan bloggers, and you can see upcoming program topics and suggest ones that you'd like us to cover. So check it out, all at kidsthesedays.org. We had help today from Nikki Navio, teen reporter extraordinaire who comes to this program via the Alaska Teen Media Institute. Our producer is Sarah Gonzalez, and she keeps our website looking and working great. Sarah is also our business manager. Jessica Cochran is our regular contributor and technical editor. I'm your host, Shanna Sheehy. Thanks for spending time with me today, and I'll see you next time.
Kids These Days is an independent production of the Content Producers Guild. The opinions shared on the program are those of the host, guest, and contributors, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KTD producers, partners, or funders. Major funding for Kids These Days comes from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. The program is made in partnership with KSKA-FM in Anchorage and the Alaska Public Radio Network. Find out more about Kids These Days anytime at kidsthesedays.org.